Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. We talk a lot about the ways TV has changed, streaming services, cable networks, time shifting. It's a lot to navigate.
But sometimes a broadcast network still creates a big success that looks a lot like television has always looked. This happened this past fall when ABC added the hospital drama The Good Doctor.
Based on an earlier Korean series, The Good Doctor stars Freddie Highmore as Sean Murphy. Sean is a surgical resident who was diagnosed with autism and savant syndrome years earlier. Richard Schiff plays his boss and mentor who stands up for him when everyone at the hospital worries that his brain's patterns won't make for, well, a good doctor.
We'll talk about the show this week and the way it fits into the long history of hospital shows, including hits like ER and Grey's Anatomy. And we'll also talk about why it's been a success on this week's Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Stephen Thompson.
Also joining us is Glenn Weldon from NPR's Arts Desk. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair is my pal, Alan Sepinwall. Alan is a TV critic for UpRocks. He's the author of books like Breaking Bad 101, and he joins us from Newark. Hi, Alan.
Hey, guys.
It's always good to hear your voice, buddy.
Always a pleasure.
Well, so The Good Doctor is a show that Alan and I have both kind of bumped into probably more than Stephen and Glenn have prior to deciding that we would talk about it. So I'm going to go to Stephen first. You have seen, you know, not every single one, but a good amount of this show. What did you think of it?
Well, it's interesting. We've talked before about pilots mm-hmm. and the way you can't always judge a show by its pilot.
Right.
And when I watched the first episode of this show, it was probably, I would say, 2.5 minutes into the first episode before I yelled, "I hate this show." And throughout the first episode, I yelled, "I hate this show," or another word followed by "this show," probably 8 or 10 times. Uh-huh. I found the pilot so incredibly aggravating with just this mix of mawkishness and cliches and more cliches, you know, dramatic boardroom conflicts.
Yes.
Once you get past the first episode, mm-hmm. it starts to shift more into a standard medical procedural with this diverse cast of characters, some of whose interactions are more interesting than others. It becomes a lot less painless to watch. The first episode culminates in a scene where this boardroom, they're all harumphing, like, "Wow, we can't have a doctor with autism, blah, 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 and but he's blah, 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 blah." And then they bring in...
That's exactly how it goes.
That was a quote, not a paraphrase.
Yeah.
And they bring in Dr. Sean Murphy and to have him speak his case.
"My bunny went to heaven in front of my eyes. The day that the copper pipes in the old building smelled like burnt food, my brother went to heaven in front of my eyes."
This room full of skeptics, having heard, among other things, the words, "my bunny went to heaven," start clapping.
Yeah.
"I want to be the first to welcome you to San Jose St. Bonaventure Hospital. We're very proud to have you."
Oh, this is clearly going to work great. Mm-hmm. That is the takeaway from this boardroom full of skeptics. I never, ever, ever would have picked up this show again after the first episode if I didn't have to. And the fact that it becomes, I think, more agreeable and kind of interesting and has some good moments, it gets there. But I was so frustrated with it, especially at first.
All right. Talk to me, Glenn.
Well, I mean, that line that we just heard kind of encapsulates my entire arc of reactions to this show, right? Because it begins... "The day that the rain smelled like ice cream." And I thought to myself at that time, huh, now that is a specific, mm-hmm. Kind of interesting insight into how someone with autism's brain might work, what the context they might put around something. That's good on your show. I mean, it's kind of similar to some of the stuff you read. If you've read The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which is about a kid on the spectrum, that's kind of the same sort of framing,
And they do stick with that over the course of the show, that's how he identifies important moments, is that he remembers smells.
Right. But then the sentence ends, and it ends with, "my bunny went to heaven," and I sat there going, nope. all of a sudden I was watching, and then there was a cloud, and there were some bobby pins swirling in the air, and a Glenn-sized hole in the wall, because nope. It seems to me that every time this show has something specific that it's doing about trying to get us inside the head of this kid, it follows it up immediately with sentimentality, with mawkishness. And that doesn't become less as the show went on. I've seen the most recent episode about the conjoined twins, which is just where they're just doubling down. Now, I don't watch procedurals. I'm a process nerd, but I don't watch procedurals. I don't watch cop shows, lawyer shows, doctor shows, because it's just, it's a taste thing. It's a genre that doesn't appeal to me. If you want.
It's a taste thing, and that I have some.
No.
It's just kidding.
It's my personal, like, if you want me to watch a procedural, I mean, I do watch The X-Files for my sins, and you just got to throw in a Fluke Man, and I'm there.
Right.
So as soon as this show throws in a Fluke Man or two, I might come back to it. But this is not for Glenn's. I also have theories, Stephen, on why this is popular with people who are not me.
Yeah, we'll come back to it. So, Alan, actually, the reason why I knew that you were the right person to join us for this conversation, one of the reasons, was that you had tweeted a screenshot of the great moment when a character on the show says to Sean Murphy, "Are you a good doctor?"
Yep.
And you had said something like, "I think, oh no, the good doctor, don't do this."
Yeah.
So where do you come down on the good doctor?
My feelings about the good doctor wander far afield and then come back now and then. I'm a sucker for a medical procedural show.
Yeah.
Hulu added ER last week, and I've watched at least 20 episodes since they added it in the age of peak TV. I have no excuse for that, but that just to sort of illustrate how much I enjoy hospital shows. And beyond that, I have a number of loved ones who are at different points along the autism spectrum, so I'm always interested in how pop culture winds up portraying it. And I think there are moments when the show is really good, and I like Freddie Highmore a lot, and then there are moments where I just want to, you know, bash my head against the wall. And one of them is when the, you know, neighbor-slash-potential girlfriend is about to kiss him and says, "Are you a good doctor?" Like, it just, it can't leave well enough alone.
Uh-huh.
It has so much good raw material, and I understand why it's a success because of that. But it just sort of, it keeps larding up every moment with another thing and then another thing and then another thing, and it can't quite help itself.
Yeah. I do wish he had turned to the camera and said, "No, I'm the good."
There is a very specific dread that comes about when you are watching a television show or a movie and you sense that someone is about to say the title. It's a very particular dread. But I will take up for this show in the following way, right? It owes something to ER, but it owes much more to Grey's Anatomy. I think what ABC is doing here is trying to figure out what comes after Shondaland, right? Mm-hmm. What comes after the bunch of Shonda Rhimes shows, of which it doesn't appear they're going to get more because she's going to go work for Netflix. What now, right? Scandal is ending. They're not going to get more. What now? And I think it is reasonable to think that maybe another hospital drama. I mean, I like Richard Schiff. I think if you're going to have somebody trying to play like the gruff mentor who doesn't always know what the right thing to do is, I think he makes about the best of this that is possible.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I don't dislike their choice of medical cases, which is a big thing in shows like this. I did think the conjoined twins episode had at least one too many reverses.
Mm-hmm.
There are several reverses in that episode where it's like, oh, the big emotional pull is going to be X. No, wait, it's the opposite of X.
Yeah.
No, wait, it's the opposite of the opposite of X.
Right, and all of them asserted with the same force, with putting the
I agree.
Pressing the accelerator full tilt. So,
I agree. But they have found to me some interesting medical questions about, you know, they're not new to medical dramas, but they're interesting to me. It's nicely executed. They do have kind of a lot of supporting characters, not all of whom I think have been fully fleshed out. There's a woman who originally seemed like she was going to be competitive with him, a colleague, but now she's sort of his work bestie, and he gets all of his kind of guidance about the world at work through her. And she's also the conscience of a bunch of the other people at the hospital. She's the woman who tells all the men at the hospital how to be human.
Right.
So that is a little odd to me. I think I am probably, I mean, I'm definitely based on this conversation, I am the person who likes The Good Doctor the most. I definitely like it more than Glenn. Mm. I'll start there. I like it more than Stephen. Although I have the same misgivings about the pilot. Mm-hmm. I think when it's being set up as like a, I think the whole premise of it takes some time to establish and to me never becomes completely believable.
I was happy to see that the saintly brother goes away, or at least he's downplayed.
He fades from.
Yeah. They do a nice job after a few episodes of letting villains be right sometimes, mm-hmm. and letting heroes be wrong.
I think that's right.
I think they try to grapple with a lot of ethical issues on this show in ways that I think can be interesting. I do think there is a larger theme of this show, though, that begins to explain maybe part of why it is so enormously popular. Mm-hmm. I think one of those things is, as you said, Linda, there's a great vacuum in medical dramas. I mean, Grey's Anatomy is on its last leg. We haven't even mentioned House, which is actually has the same showrunner, David Shore, as The Good Doctor. There's a lot of DNA there. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's an overarching message of this show, which is the undercutting of arrogance and skepticism, which I think the show views as the same thing. And especially in scenes like where you have that very skeptical board of directors, where they kind of have to be brought around. Skeptics are kind of being brought around. Dr. Murphy will say to the hotshot Dr. Melendez, I believe he says, "You're very arrogant." Repeatedly says, "You're very arrogant." And there's this kind of undercutting of his arrogance. You also, I think that line, "My bunny went to heaven," gets at a little bit of an undercurrent. I think there's an undercurrent of Christianity to this show, of Christian values of this show. There is a point where during a painstaking surgery on a fetus, one of the doctors looks at the other doctor and says, "Baby, that's the first time you didn't call it a fetus." There are little glimmers of Christian messaging.
A certain brand of Christian
messaging in this show. And I think that can't be ignored when you look at why this show is a phenomenon. I think this show is developing or has developed a very, very large following among people who share those values. And I don't think that can be completely separated from a discussion of this show.
Right. Interesting.
I agree with that. Here's my theory that kind of builds off of that, I think, in a way. The last time we on this show talked about a mainstream phenomenon, mainstream network broadcast phenomenon that came out of nowhere and got huge was This Is Us. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that this show shares with This Is Us, which is, I think, the need for, in today's kind of punishing news cycle, which is bruising, but then it becomes numbing, right? So right. I think there's a need for people to have something that I find repellent and oxymoronic, a good cry. Mm-hmm. And both of these shows are engineered so that by the 45-minute mark, you can clock it. Yeah. There will be something that just reaches for your amygdala and just tries to wring the stuffing out of it.
Yeah.
I think that's what unites here. This melodrama of the week structure asks us to invest in these little tiny morality plays every week, and that's just not something I'm prepared to do, but millions and millions of people are.
Yeah. Alan, I want to go back to you. You had mentioned sort of talking about some of the stuff about the way they handle Sean Murphy and the kind of the spectrum stuff that comes up in this show. Where do you ultimately come down on that? We haven't really talked about it very much. It's a little bit the Rain Man version.
It's very the Rain Man, and that's one of my issues with it, I think, ultimately. And the thing you discover when you start learning more and more about autism is that pretty much anyone on the spectrum, no matter where what point they're at, even if they're very close to someone else, they're never going to be exactly alike. It's sort of like a snowflake. You know, when you look too closely, it's always very different. So you can't look at what Freddie Highmore is doing and saying, "Oh, that's wrong." There's always going to be someone on the spectrum who presents with an affect very similar to his.
Yeah, and let's hear a little bit of what that sounds like, what that performance sounds like.
In the middle cerebral vein, it has low flow out of the brain.
You're thinking low flow out means low flow in?
Yes, that is what I'm thinking. We should look at the arterial inflow phase. We'd like to look at the arterial inflow phase, please.
So what you get a lot of the time is, you know, ever since going back to Rain Man and Dustin Hoffman, is this person who can mostly interact with the world, has difficulty with eye contact, is brilliant in some way. They always make a point to have Richard Schiff say that he has both autism and savant syndrome to clarify that not all people with autism are geniuses in some way or other. But this is a very familiar kind of portrayal of mm-hmm. someone on the spectrum. And I think about something like the show Parenthood, where one of the kids had Asperger's. And that felt a little bit more nuanced to me and a little bit less like the thing that Hollywood always does. And it seems like the show is still kind of fumbling around quite a bit with how it wants to portray him. There was one episode early on where the female surgeon figures out that Sean does not respond to direct questions, and the only way to get information out of him is to hide it as a statement that he'll then respond to. And then they drop that.
They
in
totally drop that.
Afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you know, it came up a little bit earlier that the more kind of specific, and I don't want to say quirky because that's the wrong word for it, but the more specific and idiosyncratic his particular version of autism is to me, the more interesting the show is. But the more work it takes to kind of be thoughtful about those things. And the odd thing to me, and everyone just strap in, the odd thing to me is I think they may have done better work with Sheldon on Big Bang Theory, having him both able and not able to recognize how this kind of issue fits into his life, even though they have never been willing to name it. Mm-hmm. They've pretty clearly had him identify it, you know, as the way I am, mm-hmm. You know, they've established certain things about what he needs and what he can and cannot do that has weirdly sometimes paid off for me. And we've talked before about a lovely piece that Noel Murray wrote about finding some resonances in there with his son, who also has autism, and he's written about that too. But Alan, I also want to ask you, from kind of a TV business perspective, where do you come down on the whole what is making this show hit with people?
Well, I think Stephen and Glenn both raised some good points. And, you know, there's a lot of skepticism out there and there's a lot of need for emotional catharsis. And when I've been going through these ER episodes on Hulu, I have tended to pick out the ones that are going to make me cry.
Yeah.
I'm a masochist. But I also think that there is something in spectrum diagnoses are on the rise all across the country. The statistics keep going up and up and up. And so it becomes harder and harder to find someone you know who doesn't know someone who's on the spectrum somewhere. And so it's kind of a right show at the right time thing. Mm-hmm. It's an issue that I think is affecting a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, too, that you talk about finding ER episodes that are going to make you cry. I always go back and find the disaster ER episodes, the ones where all of a sudden a gazillion people come flooding into the ER. And I think there's something about medical chaos and people being able to manage terrible situations that has an odd kind of, again, that amygdala, mm-hmm. like shaking. Yeah.
But you're also watching problems get solved. Mm-hmm. If you can just watch a rapid response group of problem solvers fixing people, that is exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like it. I'm going to keep watching it. I like him. He's very charismatic. I love Richard Schiff.
He's great.
I like some of the supporting performances. And I'm a sucker for a medical drama. Anyway.
Some of these surgeons are such hot shots.
It's true. It's like they know everything. So we want to hear from those of you who watch The Good Doctor. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it will be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Starbucks. For the past 43 years, Starbucks has served their bold signature espresso. But for the first time ever, they're introducing a second espresso, Starbucks Blonde Espresso. It's smooth and subtly sweet. So whatever your drink is, from a flat white to an iced Americano, try it with Starbucks Blonde Espresso. And as always, you can order ahead on your Starbucks app.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Madewell, the women's clothing brand where the motto is good days start with great jeans. Get $20 off a new pair of great jeans when you bring an old pair from any brand into a Madewell store for recycling. Like the ones with bedazzled pockets or your boyfriend's old relaxed fits from before you met him, or the white jeans you doused with red wine. Madewell works with Blue Jeans Go Green to turn them into housing insulation for communities in need. More at madewell.com/denim recycling.
Ever get to Friday, look back on the week, and say to yourself, what just happened? I'm Sam Sanders. Check out my podcast, It's Been a Minute, where every Friday we catch up on the news and the culture of the week and try to make sense of it all. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
Even before we started doing Pop Culture Happy Hour, I appeared regularly on a little NPR podcast called All Songs Considered. We are in the process of expanding it, introducing more weekly episodes of it. And just last week, Robin Hilton and I recorded our first episode of what we are, at least for now, calling New Music Fridays, in which we do a quick run through all of the big releases coming out that day. The first episode, we just decided to pilot it, and kind of like with this show, we did a pilot and we were so happy with it that we just plopped it right up in the feed and never looked back. I'm really enjoying starting to experiment with different ways to talk about music and present All Songs Considered in that podcast. That's a very long-running podcast, and I'm excited to see it freshening up. We got a couple other things that I'm really excited about coming up over the course of this year. But New Music Fridays, every Friday on All Songs Considered.
Thank you very much, Stephen, although I will say I object to the idea that you can expand All Songs Considered because it is already considering...
every song.
All the songs.
Yeah, yeah.
All the songs.
All the songs. Well, we're going to start writing them and then considering them.
Examining them for even longer. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Speaking of songs, I have discussed on this show Dua Lipa, her album, her video and song New Rules, which came out earlier this year. When I talked about it on the show, that song and that video had been out for months. But there is a new single that just dropped, as the kids say, and a new video that came out on January 12th. So you can get in on the ground floor here. It is IDGAF. It is the best song on the album.
What does that stand for, Glenn?
Well, it depends. If you go with a radio edit, you'll never figure it out. And you can't. The radio edit is out there. You owe it to yourself to get the explicit version because it is so much more satisfying. I cut you off. I don't need your love. So you can try all you want. Your time is up. I'll tell you why. You say you're sorry. It's too late now. So save it. Get gone. Shut up. Cause if you think I care about you now, well, boy, I don't give a fuck. It's another empowerment song. The video is, it's not quite as iconic as New Rules. It doesn't have quite a similar story. She's not a dancer. Don't hold that against her. And on this one, she kind of jerks rhythmically. She gives it a good college try. It's a fun to see. And there is a moment at the 2 minute and 24 second mark where the F in that title gets a full-throated breakdown, which is just so satisfying. So that's Dua Lipa, IDGAF, the song and the video.
Very nice. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Alan Sepinwall, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
So one of the challenges of being a TV critic with kids is most of the stuff I watch and write about, I cannot watch with my kids. Mm-hmm. But my daughter is now in high school. She's reached an age where I can start exposing her to a lot of the stuff that I've loved over the years. We just finished up a binge of Parks and Recreation, which she adored. I was so happy that she was as into it as she was. And I had to figure out, well, how am I going to follow up that? And I decided to go with One Day at a Time, the Netflix remake, whose second season is debuting, I think, the day that this podcast drops.
Yeah, it is.
She is really into it. I'm very impressed. She, you know, even though she grew up watching a lot of those terrible Disney and Nick Jr. live action sitcoms, you know, shot in front of an audience, she had not watched a multicam comedy in a long time, and she was a little apprehensive about this. She's very into it. She loves the various topics that the show deals with, in addition to the humor. She's already sort of wandering around the house going, oh, Schneider. So... One Day at a Time. I'm very happy.
Thank you very much, Alan Sepinwall. So what is making me happy this week? I was in New York. There is a video recommendation coming at the end of this story. I went and had a makeup lesson at Sephora. And I had posted a picture on Instagram and said, here's the thing that they did for me. I will never achieve this again. And a very nice person on Instagram said, it's really not that hard. You've done all kinds of interesting things. You can learn how to do this. All you have to do is watch some drag makeup tutorials. Now, let me tell you, you have never seen a rabbit hole so deep and so full of rabbits and so full of delightful rabbits. Now, it is safe to say many people who watch drag makeup tutorials are not looking to exactly emulate
sure.
the result of a drag makeup tutorial, although if you are, great for that too. Mm-hmm. But there's all kinds of interesting stuff in there about use of products in light and shadow and contouring and all this other stuff. Plus, they are delightful company while you watch them do makeup. I watched Valentina today, one of the Drag Race queens, who was, you know, addresses all the makeup as you would imagine, as her. You know, I know a lot of queens like the foundation stick. I've tried her. I find her a bit thick. It's just so much fun. If you just put drag makeup tutorial into YouTube, you will never emerge until you're fully ready. So if you have the flu, if you have a broken leg, if you're under quarantine, drag makeup tutorial, that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at NPR Monkey C. You can find Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can find Glenn at GH Weldon. And you can find Alan Sepinwall at Sepinwall. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica _ Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. That's KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Anytime.
And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have a second and you're so inclined, we say this every week, but if you drop us a review on Apple Podcasts, if you like the show, it really does help other people find it. We always want to share the show with as many people as possible, and that is one of the big things that you can do to help. But thank you in the meantime for listening, and we will see all of you right back here next week.